Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us one of my favorite guests, and I'm sure she's one of your favorite guests, too. Her name is Joyce Riley. Hi, Joyce. How are you doing?
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stan. It's my pleasure.
Well, Joyce was kind enough to come on. It's sort of a last-minute invitation, but people who were scheduled, it canceled out at the last minute. And Joyce, of course, always has such fascinating information. She does a program on the American Freedom Network. She does a program on Genesis. And one of the best informed people in the country about the Gulf War syndrome and about the tragedy that has befallen this country. And the young men were sending off to fight halfway around the world, but we're not exactly sure why we're in that war. Well, it was because of the weapons of mass destruction. But there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. Well, Saddam Hussein is a wicked and evil man, and the people of Iraq are better off without him. I'm not doubting he's a wicked and evil man, and the people of Iraq may be better off without him, but what about the dictator of North Korea? What about the dictatorship in the Saudi Arabia? What about the dictatorship in Kuwait? Because that is a dictatorship. There's no democracy there. In fact, the dictatorships all throughout the world. Are we going to go into every one of those countries and attack them? And, of course, why are we really there? Well, if you, of course, have listened to our program, you know the war was planned back in 1998. If you've read the book by Paul O'Neill, The Price of Loyalty, this will be covered in my latest newsletter, they were planning 8 months before the September 11th attack, on going into Iraq. Who was planning? Why? Paul O'Neill attended the secret cabinet meetings of the president, and there was Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney talking about how soon we're going to go into Iraq, how we're going to be able to justify it, how we're going to be able to justify a preemptive war against Iraq. And what was it all about? Why the Army had, Defense Department had prepared the maps of Iraq and where the oil was, and they already had come up with plans on how to divide up the oil of Iraq. And what do you think the boys over there are fighting for? They're not fighting to bring democracy to the people over there. They're fighting for entirely different purposes. But how many civilians have died? How many Americans have died? How many American casualties have there been? We never talk about the casualties. We talk about the death toll. But what is the casualty count about now, Joyce? Do we have any idea?
You're talking about the second Gulf War?
I'm talking about the second Gulf War.
Well, it appears now that Colonel Hackworth has probably been the closest in his figure of somewhere between 14,000 and 15,000. The information has been released from a number of veterans organizations saying that they believe around 11,000 have already been returned back to the states that have been ill and for some reason, whether it be a mental illness or physical illness. I do believe it's close to 14,000 to 15,000. The number of people that have been air vacked into Landstuhl, Germany is just staggering. For a military unit like this or for a war that is being fought in the manner that it is, there's far too many people that are becoming ill with bizarre problems. But we're not hearing about those. I'm getting information from troops that are coming back saying that they were struck down with some weird illness. Now, that's not normally what happens on the battlefield. You know, a battlefield is like any place else, but it's more dangerous. But these people are coming down with bizarre things that are appear to be immune system dysregulation or multi-system disorders. It just takes them. That kills them.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment with Joyce Riley. Almost sounds like the shades of the first Gulf War, the Gulf War illness that has stricken between 200,000 and 400,000 Americans. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Joyce Riley. And she comes from a radio program, the American Gulf War Veterans Association. She does radio programs on Genesis. She does radio programs on the American Freedom Network. And we were talking about the men who are coming back from the second Gulf War, from the present, a war that we're fighting over in Iraq. And a lot of these are coming down with bizarre diseases. You're not hearing about this. After all, they control very much what the American people are allowed to hear and what they're allowed to think. And they focus our attention on certain specific items. Martha Stewart, Toby Bryant, you know, what Richard Clark said and what he didn't say. And will Condoleezza Rice testify under oath or won't she testify under oath? And they focus our attention on certain things to keep our attention from other important issues. And if you look at so much of the news in the evenings, it's so insipid. You know, they want to tell us all about the animals and about the fire at this place. But the really important issues that are going to influence us, they very, very seldom mention. So, Joyce, what were you saying about so many of the people coming back from the Gulf with these bizarre illnesses that we're not hearing about?
Well, let me talk in terms of military news that you're not hearing about also. First of all, these people that are being air-vacked to Landstuhl, Germany, in large numbers, and then off to Walter Reed Hospital, have literally filled Walter Reed Hospital. For whatever reason now, it was in, if you remember, in June and July, it was being called a weird pneumonia. And all of a sudden, you know, many, many people were struck down with pneumonia. Well, that just doesn't happen in a war zone in a temperate climate like that. And they don't get hit that fast to where within 24 hours they are compromised totally and have to be air-vacked out. That just doesn't happen. But in these cases, we're seeing a number of strokes, which may or may not be related to the anthrax vaccine. As you recall, the NBC reporter had a stroke that a lot of people now are looking at the anthrax vaccine as causation for his stroke also. So there are some strokes happening in these very young troops, which is not normal, absolutely is not normal. Now, what we're hearing is that they are now facing the same headaches, the same rashes, joint pain. And that's starting to come out of Afghanistan and out of Operation Iraqi Freedom. The United States government was under a legal duty to which they were supposed to do physician's evaluations of these troops prior to their leaving and being deployed and then upon return. And of course that comes out of lessons learned from the first Gulf War. You know, we didn't learn anything from the first Gulf War other than these lessons learned.
Now, well, wait, hang on to that thought. We want to bring our other stations right back online here. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon is Joyce Riley. And, of course, we're talking about the first Gulf War. There's supposedly some lessons we learned. Well, we don't really know what lessons we learned because we really didn't try to learn it because the American government, Defense Department, is still denying that there is such a thing as one entity responsible for the Gulf War illness. Now, you see, they use these word games. Yes, there's not one entity. There are a number of entities, but we have over 200,000 of these young men who are already getting disability, and it suggested there may be up to another 150,000 to 200,000 more who have not yet been certified by the Veterans Administration but have severe complaints. Is that figure fairly accurate, Joyce?
Yeah, but you're saying that there's how many?
Well, we say there are about 200,000 from the first Gulf War,
right,
that are getting disability payments. The government acknowledges there's something wrong with them, but they claim it's all psychological. There really is no Gulf War illness. And then, in addition to the 200,000 of the 690,000 we sent, aren't there between another 150,000 and 200,000 that have some sort of illness, but the government won't acknowledge it? How many in that second category?
Around 200, 250,000. I think it's, let's say, those that have been declared disabled, about 250,000. And what that means is, as you went through the laborious process to go through the Gulf War, Persian Gulf War examining group, the Persian Gulf War testing group, I mean, they made them go through every kind of hoop you can imagine. And there are about 250,000 that have now been declared disabled to a certain extent. The average disability, now, of course, when you hear the figure, well, 250,000 people have been declared disabled, well, you think, well, the government's taking care of them. That is absolutely the furthest thing from the truth, because though 250,000 have been declared disabled, they are only receiving an average of a 10% disability, which means somewhere around $99 a month for that 10% disability. So let's say somebody was really compromised, like one of the troops that came out of Afghanistan, who had one of these bizarre pneumonias that went into a stroke, that went into left-sided weakness, all kinds of problems. That person got a quote-unquote 30% disability, can still no longer use the left leg, etc. Well, that 30% disability is only worth about $300 to $400 per month. Now, not very many people can live on that. So if we declare them disabled, we should be taking care of them, but we're not. That's only a percentage of what they get. Now, on top of that 250,000 that have been declared disabled, you have another 200,000 who attempted to get disability, but because they made a mistake, they weren't given it. And that mistake, Dr. Monteith, was that they put down as part of their diagnosis Gulf War illness. Anyone that put down Gulf War illness, to my knowledge now I understand there may be two or three that slipped through in the first earlier on, but later nobody gets to be declared ill if you put down Gulf War illness. The reason being, there is no Gulf War illness, or there is no single entity for the Gulf War illness. So I tell all troops out there that are trying to do the disability and go through the compensation program, is whatever you do, don't put down Gulf War illness. Put down symptoms such as headache or stomach pain or whatever the problem is that you have, but don't put down Gulf War illness or Gulf War syndrome, or you'll be automatically thrown out. So we have another 200,000 that have been thrown out of there, which puts it about 400,000, 450,000.
Of the 690,000, 95,000 we said. So that's certainly over two-thirds of the young people are ill, thanks from a grateful nation, as it were. There's a wonderful movie out there, if you haven't seen it, with Ted Danson. Get it at the Blockbuster before they do away with all of them. Thanks of a Grateful Nation. It's the story of the Gulf War syndrome. In fact, Senator Riegel's office, I tried to get him onto our programs, and he wouldn't come on, but he said, be sure to get that movie and watch it. And it is very thought-provoking.
Yeah, it really is. But in there, it's done by the government. It's done with the government's blessing. So understand that when you watch that movie was used to sort of downplay all the furor in the Gulf War veterans. Let me just say that Ted Danson did a wonderful job in it. The majority of the information is absolutely right on.
Except the important information they left out.
Exactly.
Isn't that what propaganda is all about, Joyce?
That's right. And this movie is perfect propaganda. Now, you'll recall, Dave and I, my husband, were traveling around the country meeting with Gulf War veterans groups in every state. We'd been across the country three times. We just were going from church to church, VFW to VFW, wherever we could get anybody to listen to us. Sometimes there would be one, sometimes there would be 400 people that would listen. And we were doing this, and we had gotten the troops in such a furor. These troops were upset. They were angry. We were going around to military bases, holding meetings just off the military base. And so the Department of Defense decided this would be a great way to sedate the troops. So you put out this movie, which basically shows the nation what the problem is, and all these troops went back to sleep and said, wow, now they're going to do something about it, which they never did. So back to the issue, though. Let me go back to the issue of lessons learned from the first Gulf War. The Department of Defense, it was codified into law, that they were supposed to do evaluations and examinations on deploying troops. The lessons learned from the first Gulf War was, well, if we would known that they and had known that they were sick at the time, then maybe we wouldn't have sent these troops over there. So it was only the mentally ill ones that went over there, got more mentally ill, came back, were really mentally ill, and now, of course, we have to treat them with Prozac, Zoloft, Ativan, whatever. So that was the lesson learned from the first Gulf War. Evaluate and examine prior to leaving and when they return. Lo and behold, that was not done. So the only lesson learned from the Gulf War was not done. It's now been proven. In fact, a GAO report shows that the Department of Defense did not meet its own regulations of examining these people. Well, lo and behold, sir, on March 24th, here comes an article that says, and I couldn't believe this. The Star-Telegram in Fort Worth says, the U.S. sent medically unfit soldiers to Iraq, Pentagon acknowledges. They state, well, there was such a demand, we had to move so fast. You know, they only had 13 years to prepare for this war. So they sent off all these guard and reservists that, well, they weren't, man, we shouldn't have sent them off. And they're saying now that they sent off diabetics, they sent off asthmatics, come on. I mean, you don't send a diabetic into a war zone. The guy cannot go take his insulin every 12 hours or whatever is required of him, nor can he be guaranteed there's going to be insulin around. Well, that's what they said they did. Do I believe it? Not really. However, now they're saying we just overlooked the fact that they were sick. Now, sir, you know, in the military, an exam is done, and you know if you're sick or not. I mean, if you're 2 pounds over, you're thrown off flight status. You have to go through all the hoops to get back into that system, and nobody wants to lose their flying status because of weight problems or because of medication or whatever, and you watch that very carefully. Well, they said they made a mistake. They sent mentally ill people over there. They sent all these physically ill people, and that's why they're coming back so sick. In fact, Knight Ritter reported last March that the military was not screening troops both before and after deployments as required by law. Those screenings were supposed to include pre- and post-deployment blood tests. Now, Congress mandated those tests to be done in 1997 to prevent reoccurrence of what happened in the first Gulf War. But you see, you and I are the ones that are going to be targeted. If we lose one receipt from one business luncheon, you know, we will forever have to pay for it. But the Department of Defense didn't even pay any attention to that 1997 law, and now the GAO is again looking into the National Guard and Reserve issue. Would it surprise you, sir, if I were to tell you that one out of every six deaths that has occurred in Iraq is of an active duty person?
Well, you're of an active duty person. We mean the rest of the reserves and National Guard?
That's correct.
And, of course, they never should send the reserves and the National Guard over there. The National Guard was never intended to be used for aggressive military actions in foreign countries. It was to guard the United States.
Absolutely.
Not to carry out a political war, which this is, at least in part, for the oil. And if you don't believe that, you get Paul O'Neill's book, The Price of Loyalty, and find that they'd already decided before the September 11th attack how they were going to divide up Iraq's oil. That's page 96 of Paul O'Neill's book, or covered in my latest newsletter. Understand that they're lying to the American people. They're lying to the widows and the mothers and the boys who are coming back dead. Oh, we're just so concerned, so terrible, but they died fighting your country. No, they died fighting for Halliburton. They died fighting for Unocal. They died fighting for Chevron, because, of course, Condoleezza Rice worked for Chevron before she became the National Security Advisor. But they can't tell the American people that. That's too horrible to contemplate.
Absolutely not. And so here, now this is an official, this information came as statistic from the Air Force Times. Five out of six of the deaths in Iraq are Guard and Reservists. Now, Guard and Reservists, let me speak to you. If you plan on going to Iraq or being deployed, let me tell you what happened to us in the first Gulf War. We got ready to go. We were so psyched. Let's go. Kick some butt. Man, we're going to save this country. I was right there. And I'll tell you, Dr. Stan, the minute I put that flight suit on at Kelly Air Force Base, and I was sitting, when I was in the, I was living in the officer's quarters there at Kelly, and I heard George Bush say, "This is the beginning of the new world order." I was so proud. That was me. I was part of that. I had no idea what a new world order was. I didn't know. Here's a guy named Michael New who's taking a stand at 22 years of age. I'm 45 years of age, not even knowing which end is up with respect to the political spectrum, and I thought I was doing the right thing.
I'm sure that most of the people over there do feel they're doing the right thing. They just do not understand the real force behind what's going on today, who controls both political parties, who makes mockery out of this concept of democratic elections. They don't understand the Brotherhood of Darkness. Well, we're going to be back here in just a few moments with our special guest today. Joyce Riley will tell you how to get to their website, to get their information. You'll certainly want to get hold of it. And I hope that you'll understand that your son or your daughter may be the next one who's sent over to fight in these needless wars. Because our troops are not coming home when this is all over. The plan is to leave our troops there indefinitely as we move towards World War III.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement, is currently unavailable at the regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIB-WAR right now.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierney. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And let me tell you a little bit about our Miracle 2 soap products. They come with a soap and a moisturizing soap with a gel, with a lotion, and with a neutralizing solution. Now, we can't make any health claims for them. All we can do is tell you that a lot of people who use these products think that they really do help. Certainly Joyce Riley has given this to a number of veterans for the rashes they got in the Gulf War, and nothing else would help them. They seem to have gotten dramatically better with Miracle 2 soap products, and we've heard this from people with rashes and acne, and I certainly use the moisturizing soap because it's taken care of a rash that I got from using soap. And of course you will find that many people who have heartburn will take the neutralizer, they feel better. People with lower gastrointestinal tract symptoms use it. All we can do is suggest, try the various products, see if they help you. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, before I forget, Joyce, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your ministry and get the great information that you have?
Well, thank you very much. The website is Gulf War Vets, GulfWarVets.com, or you can go to ThePowerHour.com. And I wanted to mention one thing when you were talking about the Miracle 2, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
I just got a letter from a Vietnam veteran, and he said, "I cannot thank you enough. You have no idea what you have done for me. When you first told me you thought this might take away my foot fungus from the Vietnam War, I thought you had to be crazy. I've had it for 30 years. Well, guess what? It's just about gone." And I can't tell you, Dr. Stan, what that means. You know, being a physician or a nurse, and we see things that just don't work. Unfortunately, they're not able to treat certain problems. certain long-term chronic problems, especially the foot fungus that a lot of Vietnam vets have. You know, it is such a joy to know that we can do that for them. And when you sell Miracle 2, that helps us to give it away free to these Vietnam veterans, Gulf War veterans, and all the way back to Korean and World War II veterans. And we haven't had anybody from the second Gulf War ask for any yet, but we sure have a lot from the first Gulf War.
Well, and
I just want to say thank you to you for continuing to support the veterans issue on doing this.
Well, that's why we, of course, get the items from you rather than going around you, because we feel that's the least we can do to help those men who've given so much for our country.
And we give away so much to them also, so I just thank you for that. But, you know, one thing I wanted to mention real quickly on the reserve issue. We were talking in terms of reservists, and I said I wanted to speak to those that are reservists and guardsmen. I had been a guardsman and a reservist prior to 1991, at that time that I went back to Kelly Air Force Base and volunteered. I was supposed to go to Desert Storm during the, but the ceasefire occurred, so I didn't go. So I flew live missions, AeroVac missions with the active duty Air Force. But when I came back sick, and I had 10 shots in one day, I wrote in my journal, it said, "Today, I was so proud. I took 10 shots today to serve my country. I would take 1,000 to serve my country." Little did I know what I was saying there, and little did I know how ill I was going to be in 6 months as a result of that.
And little did you know that they were using experimental vaccines and lying to the troops.
Absolutely. But the point is that when I went to the VA, when I went to the Department of Defense and said, "Look, all of us nurses are coming down with this rare case of multiple sclerosis. We all have this demyelinating disease." The Department of Defense says, "We don't know anything about it. It's not our problem. Didn't happen to you and because of vaccines. Thank you very much for your service. Goodbye." That's basically what they said. And I had no idea at that time that a reservist or a guardsman could not go to a VA hospital. I had no idea. And boy, did I learn a lesson hard. That's why all of these troops out there that are flapping in the breeze, that have been kicked to the side of the curb with this disposable Gulf War army that we had, they are not being treated. Because, number one, they've got a pre-existing condition. They can't get health care benefits. They have no way to get treated at a VA hospital, only active duty. And when I just told you that one out of six people that dies in the Gulf War is active duty, that means five out of the six that die are Guard and Reserve.
And, of course, how about the people who are getting ill, about the same figures?
Exactly. Percentage is just about like that. So you've got all these troops now that have no place to turn. They're going to come back, and they're going to say, "Thank you very much. We don't know of any problems. Goodbye." And that's the tragedy of it all. So they are not doing the workup, and they're not doing the evaluation when they return from deployment, because they don't want to find who's ill. Now, you've had Doug Roeke on the program and Loren Murray on the program,
right?
And they've all said, if you're in Iraq right now, if you are breathing in Iraq, you are going to probably will become ill.
And this is, of course, because the depleted uranium dust that just permeates that whole area because of the shock and awe program we had, where we used all these depleted uranium missiles. And what people don't understand is depleted uranium, they take out less than 1% of the uranium, and all the rest of it is still uranium. And that is what, of course, we're using in our shells, and that's why we use it, because it's such an effective killing weapon. But it's also going to produce permanent health damage, and they know that, and they're suppressing the information because they don't want to give up this weapon because the purpose of the military is to kill people, and this is a very effective killing weapon. But we were supposed to, though, kill the enemy. Unfortunately, it's going to kill a lot of our own boys. Well, how do you want to put out your website quickly before we go to the break?
Sure, GulfWarVets.com, ThePowerHour.com, and will we have some time to talk more about DU?
We sure will. We'll be back here in just a moment. Right now, though, we're going to have to go to that break, because that's the way this program is structured right here at Genesis.
Would you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-based education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs Hopker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for outcome-based education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me talk to you a little bit about some of the books we have, some of the tape sets we have dealing with the educational process. And one of the best ones right now is a book called Fed Ed. It goes into the background of the No Child Left Behind policy. It was Ted Kennedy's program. But, of course, it was passed by the Republicans. George Bush got that passed. And it basically federalizes education. Now the federal government is spending $60 million a year on education, totally unconstitutional, and has designed a program aimed at changing the attitudes, values, and beliefs of your children, converting them into good little global citizens, causing them to hate America, to hate God, and to hate their families. They know exactly what they're doing, and the children have to be educated to the test. So the book is called Fed Ed. Now, we have a wonderful four-tape set that goes with that called Fed Ed. You need to get the four-tape set. You need to get the book. And they're both available by calling radioliberty.com. That's by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We carry Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, The Chronology of Education. We carry Charlotte Isbey's book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. That's The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. We carry the book on outcome-based education. We have a four-tape set on outcome-based education. You need to understand what they're doing to the minds of our children. The Cloning of the American Mind by Beverly Eichmann must reading for anybody who's concerned about what is happening to our children, how they're collecting dossiers on the children. They have them take these tests and then ask questions about you. They're collecting dossiers on you, too, through your children. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and, of course, our guest is Joyce Riley and the American Gulf War Vets Association. So let's get on into the depleted uranium, because this idea, well, it's depleted, so what are you worried about? They don't explain to you that depleted uranium is 99% uranium.
That's right, and the half-life being 4.4 billion years. When you consider that the United States has transferred this or sold depleted uranium to 29 countries, that many times bullets for handguns are manufactured with DU, the 30-millimeter shell that is in the A-10, the 122-millimeter shell or the 120-millimeter shell out of the M1A1 main battle tank, the AC-130 Spectre gunship, many of the bunker buster bombs all had depleted uranium in them. And we have dropped 4,000 tons of just DU in Iraq. 4,000 tons. I mean, we have destroyed that area, which many would consider what was Eden. When you think biblically what the where the rivers are along the Euphrates there, that being the area of Eden, that was Camisea that was detonated, that had thousands and thousands of pounds of ammunition, if not tons of ammunition, stored there. So when we look at all of the military equipment and hardware that contains depleted uranium, and how many areas of this country are now destroyed, and I'm talking about in the United States, a total of 42 states have been have areas that have been condemned because of depleted uranium. Not to mention, a lot of people are familiar with what happened near the Naval Air Station in Fallon, Nevada, where they had the fastest-growing leukemia cluster. Well, we have that fast-growing problem with Gulf War veterans also. because the A1 main battle tank fired depleted uranium shells into the Iraqi tanks during the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War. Not so many tanks in the second Gulf War, but it was used in bunker buster bombs and used in the second Gulf War in a number of other ways, especially with the A-10. So everywhere depleted uranium was sprayed, and I'm talking about once that projectile hit its target, it would go through anything like butter. Then those little fragments, those little that are smaller, too small to see, if one of them lodges in your respiratory system, then you have more than 200 times the amount of radiation considered safe in this country. And many people I have said that that is equal to, if you've breathed in depleted uranium, that's equal to having one chest x-ray per hour the rest of your life. So we are talking about radiation that is killing our first Gulf War veterans. Many of them have already died. In fact, there were reports of a number of rectal cancer cases, which was very strange. Why rectal cancer in these young men from the first Gulf War? Well, it seems that in some of the tanks, they set on depleted uranium munitions. And thus, they got the rectal cancer, spread to other organs of the body, and a very sad ending, as you can imagine.
Well, of course, I think people have to understand, when you fire this shell and it goes through, a piece of steel, it burns. And when it burns, you get a dust, and that is uranium oxide dust, which then, of course, you can inhale, and it goes into your lungs, and it gets in your bloodstream, and it goes to your bones, and it goes to various other organs. And isn't there a higher incidence of leukemia in these people because of the proximity of the radioactive material to the bone marrow?
Oh, there's no doubt. There's a much higher proximity of leukemia, or much higher incidence of leukemia, of various types of cancers, bone cancer, you name it. And the sad part is that even though the United States refuses to test for depleted uranium, the UK has been doing some testing, even from bone marrow, and have found not only from the first Gulf War veterans have found depleted uranium, but they found weapons-grade uranium also. And many of these people are so incredibly ill that they probably will not live much longer, and that is so sad.
Now, do we have any idea how many of the first Gulf War veterans have passed away? Because, of course, young people don't die. That's how you can sell insurance to young people so cheaply. Last thing I'd heard, it was, about 11 or 12,000? Is it much higher than that?
Well, the Department of Defense official figure was 11 or 12,000. But it depends on how you ask the question. When I talk to journalists that will ask me that question, I tell them, you go to the Department of Defense, but you need to know how to ask the question. When you ask them how many people have died since the first Gulf War, you need to say to them, how many active duty, guard, and reservists have died since the first Gulf War? You need to ask that's being reported in the primary, secondary, and tertiary facilities of the military, and you need to ask in civilian facilities. Because you see, if you don't ask the entire question, then you're going to get a segmented answer. Now, Dr. Garth Nicholson, of course, said 3 years ago that it was close to 30,000. The Department of Defense still holds to their 10,000 figure, but I think it's absolutely erroneous because I don't think they're reporting the whole picture. If you look at the number of people that are ill, in fact, I will tell you that our organization at the AGWVA, 9 out of 10 people that call us, 9 are sick, 1 is not sick. So we believe that the figure is so high now. I mean, consider the fact that we've got 200,000 that now say they're disabled. Now, that's only the people that will go to the VA and put up with the bureaucratic treatment that they get there. That's only the two-thirds that have reported that they are disabled or want disability. There are many of them who say, I want nothing to do with the government ever again because they lied to me about what happened during the Gulf War. So if, let's say, there was another 100,000 or another 200,000 of those that refused to have anything to do with the government, we are up to almost 9.5 out of 10 people being ill. So we know that the figure of those that have died is much higher as we're constantly getting obituaries in the mail, reports of people that have died, and I think that the figure is much, much higher than what we're being told. You see, if they had told the truth about the first Gulf War, we would have never had a second Gulf War. If they had told the truth, like Senator Wellstone's office did in 1995 when we had a meeting with them, And they admitted to us that 90% of the Gulf War veterans that served in the first Gulf War were out by 1995.
They were out of the military is what you're saying.
Yes, they had either been discharged, they had been medically discharged, whatever reason. And you don't have a war and then everybody go home. Colin Powell said there'd be a 20% downsizing. Listeners, we had a 90% downsizing after the first Gulf War. Well, I began to predict, Dr. Monteith, a few weeks ago, that any time now you're going to start seeing mass exodus from the military. Now, you've been hearing all the reports, gee, we need more people in the military, we don't have enough, we're going to have to send them for 24 months, not 12 months like we thought. You know, we need all these specialties that we don't have. You know, all the excuses. Well, lo and behold, last week, Air Force Times story, 17,000 people to leave the military. They are now beginning the exodus.
Well, I thought that we're really trying to prevent them from leaving, and even though their assigned tour of duty was up, they weren't allowing them to get out. Is that, have you run into that?
Absolutely. That's the way it was. The stop-loss program was in effect, and they were not being allowed to leave. Now, they are selectively now removing people from the service, because those people that were in there during the shock and awe campaign, they're going to want them out of the military. They were around too much DU. They're going to start having respiratory problems, compromised respiratory situations. They're going to start having renal failure. They're going to start having the kinds of problems the first Gulf War veterans had, and they don't want them in the military to be seen. So they're now going to offer all kinds of incentives for certain people to leave the military. And the announcement was, the first announcement, and you didn't hear this on CNN, I can assure you, 17,000 people to leave the military.
Well,
so they're going to have to get rid of them because, as you said, they don't want them to come home. They're going to keep them over there in Iraq. Yeah, but they're going to have to do something because they cannot have that many sick people come back to the United States.
Well, for those of you who haven't heard my interviews with Dr. Doug Rocky, and his doctorate is not in medicine, but I think it's in physics, and he was a professional career military officer, and he had a unit, about 100 men, that were assigned to they were assigned the task of cleaning up American weapons, American tanks and armored personnel carriers that had been hit by accidentally by DU, in other words, friendly fire, so that they could save the tanks so they could use them again. And they got this crew in there, and they worked on those, and they tried to clean them up, and there was no way they could ever be cleaned up satisfactorily. I read one article, and maybe you can comment on this, but I read one article in the paper where it said that 30 of the 100 men had died. Now, I asked Doug Rocky to verify that fact, and he said, well, he had to be very careful in what he said. He would not make a comment on it, but I do have that newspaper article. Do we have any idea how many of the men in his unit have died or are seriously ill? I know many of them are seriously ill. He'll admit that.
We know that between 20 and 30 of them have died, and that's pretty much common knowledge among the people that have been focusing on depleted uranium. You see, this is a problem that is not going to go away, because we have destroyed the people of Iraq, the land of Iraq. I mean, you know, we act as though here we're going to protect everybody because we're going to save every snail darter in this world. So we're going to go in, take over some poor farmer's land who's owned it for 18 generations. We're going to then, make sure that the snail darter lives. And so we have just destroyed millions of acres of countries, of other people's countries. We just only care about our country. We have destroyed the land of Bosnia, Yugoslavia, of Iran, of Iraq and Afghanistan.
And of course, we used the depleted uranium in Bosnia, and we used the depleted uranium in Kosovo. And, of course, we used it in Iraq and in Kuwait and in that whole area.
And I can assure you, we are going to find, and I mean we, and I'm talking about the Bush administration, is going to find weapons of mass destruction. Let me tell you the scuttlebutt that we are hearing. Now, we call it the chatter that we're hearing, because our chatter seems to be a whole lot more effective than the Pentagon chatter. They seem to get a lot of information, but none of it ever seems to be verified or able to be determined whether it's true or not. You recall back in July of this past year when Josh Nushi died, he was struck down with pneumonia. Within 24 hours, he was on a respirator and declared medically retired from the military. 20 years of age. College student, never smoked in his life, never had any problems health-wise, period. Well, he died, and the sad part is there were 55 guys in his unit that were also air-evac'd out to Landstuhl, Germany. He had been on a hauling mission, a classified hauling mission.
All right, now this was this pneumonia that he had, this strange, unexplained pneumonia that nobody can figure out what it is, or if they can, they're not going to tell us.
This alleged pneumonia, that's
right.
Correct. Well, his parents were told that it was a toxin. One physician got him aside and said, I need to tell you, your son was exposed to a toxin. When his parents said, I want to go over and see my son for the last time, they said, well, we can't help you because he's been medically retired from the military, so you're on your own. Well, the men in his unit took up a donation, got the parents over there. They were able to see their son. When they went into the room, lo and behold, the people were in spacesuits. They knew something was wrong. They had the gown and glove and mask to go in there. They knew something was wrong. At that point, they were going to take their son over for dialysis. He died on the way to dialysis at another hospital. And when they came back to his room to get his personal effects, the room had been sealed. They have not been allowed to have his dog tags. They have not been allowed to have any personal effects from him. And he was not the only one who died of this alleged pneumonia that caused not only the lungs to fill up immediately, what does that sound like, chemical weapons, but for him to have total nervous shutdown, total liver shutdown, and a renal failure also. Now, that doesn't happen to a 20-year-old kid who gets a little case of pneumonia. Well, as a result of that, we began to ask troops what was going on over there, and we started getting word back that, yes, there was weapons of mass destruction still over there, and we're talking about a small amount, probably from the first Gulf War. Probably, of course, thank you, Donald Rumsfeld. However, what we're looking at now and what we're being told is that the troops were ordered during that time, during that quote-unquote hauling mission, had been ordered to remove the weapons that had U.S. or NATO serial numbers reflecting the U.S. ownership.
In other words, there were things that we had sent over there to Iraq for the first Gulf War or since then?
First Gulf War.
Okay, fine.
Prior to that time. Then they were told to separate, and this is what the troops told us. They were ordered to separate the NATO serial numbers that reflected Germany, France, and Russia. So those were all taken to one area. The U.S. weapons were taken to another area.
And I think for our listeners, you have to understand that these terrible weapons of mass destruction that we're so concerned about, we sold them, and the Allies sold them to Saddam Hussein. We can't let the American people know that, but if you want that, I have an article out of the Washington Post that goes into that. We'll send it to you free of charge if you just give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We can't let the American people know we gave the wicked Saddam Hussein the chemical weapons he used to kill the Kurds. He used to kill the Iranians, and we supported him after he used them. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, and also, it was Operation Nimble Archer during the latter part of the 1980s, in which we talked to the Special Forces troops that were there supporting the U.S. military, teaching the Iraqis how to use the weapons to kill the Iranians.
Right, and so, I've actually talked to people who were part of that unit.
Yes, and yes, that's exactly what they were doing over there. They were holding their hand to do it. And yet now we say, oh my goodness, he kills his neighbors. Well, back to the issue though of the WMDs that probably will be found is that at the same time Anniston Chemical Depot began destruction of nerve agent rockets. I don't know if you recall that happening, but the Anniston Army Depot in Alabama began destroying a lot of the M55 rockets that were filled with GB or nerve agent, sarin gas. They announced doing that at a time during the middle of this war, which was so strange. And they have destroyed, by now, they just released the information, they have now destroyed more than 21,300 rockets filled with the nerve agent GB. Now, that's only 12% of the rockets, they say, that need to be destroyed. The interesting thing is, we also got reports from our troops prior to this time, or about this time, that weapons were being put on aircraft and being taken down to Alabama. Now, I cannot confirm that, but we were told that. Now we get this information today from the troops, saying from one troop in Florida who says they will be found soon. The Black Hawk helicopter pilots know where these caches of weapons are. They call it the October surprise.
In other words, these are American weapons that are being taken over to Iraq, so we can suddenly find them and say, hey, look, Saddam had them all the time. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, that probably not American. They don't want it to be American weapons. It'll probably be somebody else's.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so much. We're out of time. We could go on for another hour or two, but God bless you for everything
you're
doing.
God bless.
And give my best to Dave. Thanks so much for being with us. This has been Joyce Riley. Remember, Amanda's www.gulfwarvets.com. Be sure to go to their website, get the material. Bye-bye, Joyce.
Well, let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited, and they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is not a nice story, and yet you have to understand that there is evil in the world, and many times people working within our government are involved in this evil. We talked a little earlier about the Tuskegee Study. What was the Tuskegee Study? Recruiting 400 black men, promising that they'd be treated for their syphilis, and of course the real thing was they were not going to be recruited. They were recruited so that they could not be able to get treatment, so that they could have them die and they could autopsy them. That was a program that was started in the 1930s and carried on into the 1971, and nobody in our government was ever punished for that because it was done in the name of science. It is exactly the same sort of thing that happened in Hitler's Germany. And yet, most Americans don't understand Tuskegee, or they do not understand that there really is evil in the world. You need to get our four tape set on the Tuskegee Study. You need to get our four tape sets on the Gulf War and the Gulf War illness, because they'll give you insight into what happened 14 years ago. And believe me, the same thing is going on again today. And we're sending our boys in. And a lot of these boys, if they do come back, will be crippled forever. Because, you see, if you want to destroy a nation, you destroy the youth of the nation. You destroy the courageous, those who are idealists, those who will fight for the nation. And you end up like a country like France today, where they, in a series of two wars, they destroyed everybody with courage, and all that was left were the cowards and those who would go along. We make fun of France, but you have to study the great wars of the last century. 400,000 Frenchmen fell at Verdun. 400,000 courageous Frenchmen. But 400,000 French courageous Germans won as well. There is evil in the world today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. And our purpose is to try to let you understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, and there really are evil and wicked people, and they work through secret societies. Yes, there are secret societies, and you need to get into the background of the groups I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. We have a book on that subject. We have a video on that subject. We have an audio tape, and you can get them separately or all together. And when you understand what energizes these people, why you'll understand why we're in the mess we are today, why American jobs are disappearing overseas. You'll understand why we're fighting a war in Iraq. You'll understand why we've never found Osama bin Laden. You'll understand that most of the things going on today are simply distractions to keep you from seeing the real picture and understanding the true nature of what's going on in our world today. So if you'd like, of course, to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out across America, indeed across the world, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a copy of our March newsletter, which will be coming out soon, it goes into the background of what happened at the secret cabinet meetings in January of 2001. This was 9 months before the September 11th attack in 2001. And what were they talking about? Why Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz were talking about how we were going to go to war with Iraq, how we were going to divide up there the oil that they had. At least the Defense Department had the reports all set out how we were going to divide up their oil. But of course we can't let the American people know that that was one of the major reasons for going to war, so we have to lie to them about the weapons of mass destruction, about how Saddam Hussein might have given the weapons to Osama bin Laden, who we've never tried to get, so that's the reason he's still on the loose. And what you need to understand, if you get the book Crude Politics by Paul Sperry, which we carry, that when we sent our troops into Afghanistan, the special forces, they weren't allowed to go after Osama bin Laden. And we even have a report out of the Washington Times. We'll be glad to send you free of charge if you just give us a call and ask for it. The report on Osama bin Laden, why we didn't get him. And the high government official said, our policy is not Osama bin Laden first. We're not trying to catch him. If we caught Osama bin Laden, how would we justify the war in Afghanistan? That's what it's really all about. Osama bin Laden was not the reason we were there. That was what we had to tell the American people to get them to be willing to go to war. But we did not try to get Osama bin Laden. And then, of course, instead of continuing to try to get him and to break up the Al-Qaeda terrorists, why we went to war with Iraq. But there's another reason besides the oil, and that is to inflame the Arabs of the world, the Muslims of the world, in preparation for the coming war. And we'll be talking more about that and about Samuel Huntington's amazing book, The Clash of Civilizations, where he tells us exactly how we can avoid getting into problems between the various civilizations that exist in the world. And everything that the United States has done has been exactly the opposite from what we should have done. You could not have handled diplomatically what has happened more this way unintentionally, because we're in the process of inflaming Muslims throughout the world. And there are 1.5 billion of them, and there are only about 300 million people here in the United States. Well, we're in real trouble as a nation, because people don't understand that behind what's going on, there is organized evil. And when you understand that, when you understand the brotherhood of darkness, you'll understand what's really going on in the world. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival for our list, for our leaders and our ministers. Please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.